Welcome to the first edition of the Big Red Bus,
the initial drive
of the Big Red Bus. The
podcast. We're taking it out, Doug. We're taking
Fred
it
Pfeiffer
out.
And Doug Totus. Fred, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm living the dream, Doug. I woke up this morning to a big red sun in the sky. There were tears still streaming down my face as I contemplated the greatness of last night. The budding red leviathan that was born at the UC. I don't know about you, but I've rarely felt so ecstatic as a Bulls fan. And that says a lot considering we won six titles and I remember all of them. This is right up there. I mean, it's right up there in the top 15 moments of my life as a Bulls fan. With the realization of this team and this core three and what it could become, what say you, Doug?
I say you're going to turn me into a negative fan because there's no way I can sit next to this level of positivity and still say positive comments. It would be impossible for anyone.
Give it a
top,
try.
Top 15
please.
Moments. So, like, the Bulls are in Eastern Conference Finals and win that game one against Miami. But this is, like, right up there. You know, they win six titles, but this is right up there. I think that's maybe a little bit of a stretch. Though I was happy to see the way Zach LaVine played. And obviously, he shot the ball well, three or four from the three-point line. He wasn't taking super easy spot-up caliber threes. You know, he came off some screens. He took a couple, you know, coverage. So that was also nice to see. You could see his scoring prowess on display. So overall, I thought that was a good start.
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, I don't know about you. I laughed at Nils from the Bulls show. I had a great tweet. You know, it took Jordan 7 years to beat the Pistons. It took Zach LaVine one game. And I thought that said it all. No, you're right, though. It was exciting to see him just, you know, go three or four from the three-point range. And that alone, that shot alone, right, the integration of a player that can hit the three at a 38% rate, which this team, I think, is still lacking a little bit. You know, Hoiball is so it's so important to the success of the offense to be able to hit that three-point shot. And the Bulls really don't have – outside of Nico and Valentine that were really excelling at it. You know, I know Markkanen can do it, but his percentages weren't like earth shattering. You know, in general, 38% and above is what I consider to be, you know, good. Very good.
He's at like 37.3% right now. You're really cutting him off over 0.7%. Just
Oh, Markkanen's up to that high? Oh yeah. My gosh. That's amazing. Well, he's there too, but that's amazing because he was at 35% a week ago. That shows you how great his week was. It's so important just to have that aspect of the offense there. And if he can bring that alone, it's going to make this team so much better. And I don't know about you, I felt this way too. And you were the only one who really kind of highlighted this point that you kind of felt the Bulls could potentially regress a bit with the integration of LaVine. And it's a really good point. I mean, look at Cleveland, how they've been struggling since Thomas came back. No matter how good the player is, there is a certain amount of time that it takes for that guy to be integrated into the offense and perform well. And I thought the Bulls far out exceeded expectations with that integration last night.
I'd have to agree with you there. I felt really comfortable watching LaVine in there. He looked really natural on offense. It didn't look like he was forcing any shots up. You know, he was taking them in the flow of the offense, wasn't, you know, holding the ball tons of time or, you know, having this feeling of having to get his shots. So I thought he looked really good. It was a very positive first step. And I would say my earlier concerns about him maybe not fitting in so well and there being aggression, at least right now, that doesn't look like that'll be the case. Now, maybe going forward we'll see some of that, but so far not. What do you think of LaVine's defense? Now, he did not have a reputation as a defender coming in there, but what do you think watching him last night?
Well, obviously it wasn't stellar, and I know, I'm pretty sure you're going to be a little bit more frustrated about it than I was. In general, I never really get too concerned or too upset about poor perimeter D because I kind of always feel that it's a lot of want to. I think does he know how to play defense? Does he know how to do help defense? That's the most important thing. And when the games that really matter happen, I think he's got the athletic ability to step up his D and make a difference out there. There's no doubt. You're right. There should be a reason for frustration a bit because it's an aspect of his game I don't understand why he's not better at. He's got all those tools to be much better as a defender. But, you know, I hope it gets better, and I think it will get better. But that said, we still got Dunn, who is so good on that end. I don't know if you saw that block last night. That just there's at least three or four times in the game where there's an awe, you know, or a moment where I just have, you know, just the jaw drops at how good a defensive play he comes up with. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought that Levine's defense, so they didn't go at him at all, really. It's not like guys were scoring all over Levine last night. But just kind of watching him off the ball, and I'm going to admit, I was watching Levine specifically for this reason, and if I put all the players on the Bulls under the same microscope, I suspect almost all of them would rate as poor defenders because the team defense is really lousy. So watching Levine just kind of specifically on defense, even when he wasn't on the ball, like he really did kind of look a little bit lost. He wasn't, I think, in the right spots for the rotations. There's like a lot of points where he was, his responsibility was to help in one direction and he wasn't prepared to do it. So something that probably should be coached up a little bit and something he can work on. I'm kind of with you. There's no reason Levine shouldn't be a solid defender. I agree. It's a lot of want to. And so hopefully that's some growth he can still make. It's not a big concern to me right now, but it was something if you wanted to throw like a little bit of cloud into the pure big red sun that you woke up to today, that would maybe be like just a teeny bit of the cloud there. But I see Markkanen doing the same things frequently. I think he's also kind of in the wrong spot. And I see that with a lot of guys on the team. I think Nwaba and Dunn are probably your two guys who are really solid defensively. But even I think those guys sometimes their man-to-man defense is really great, and their pressure and speed and athleticism is really great. But the whole team from a team defensive concept is just really lacking compared to some of the past teams. And I guess maybe that's just expected when you watch Tom Thibodeau for so many years. You know, his team defense was always extremely tight, even with guys who are not great defenders.
So let's get on this topic really quick, because I think Tom's been exposed in Minnesota for, you know, hey, his defense is it's more about the players. It's not about the coach. And he's been a massive failure when it comes to team defense in Minnesota. But looking at this team now, you do bring up a good topic. And my general philosophy on life is if you want to be good defensively, you better have the pieces on the interior to be good defensively. I've seen very few examples of teams in the NBA that have been excellent defensive teams without at least one massively good or positive plus defender down low. And I think it's highlighted. You've kind of touched on a point that's lacking with this team. Is in my opinion, they got one player who's a plus at that down low as interior defense wise. It's Robin Lopez. Everyone else is a minus, I think. Even Markkanen at this level, you know, he's so young. He's got the potential to be better, but he's not. I don't think anyone would say he's a world beater. Nico's not. That's the one thing they need to do in the offseason. I don't know if that's Norlands Noel or there's a lot of potentially great players out there. Capella, you can maybe offer a contract to and steal one away from the Rockets. They need to get one other guy who's better down low to really clean up the mess when there's any penetration. Do you agree with that?
Well, I definitely think that they don't have any good interior defenders, and Robin Lopez is probably going to be gone next year too. So you're really just even going to be looking to replace the impact that Robin Lopez brings. So I do agree that that is something that they're lacking, and I think Markkanen definitely is not there right now. Nico's probably going to be off the team next year as well, which leaves you with Portis and Markkanen is probably your two bigs, and Felicio, I guess, but he's just kind of just a train wreck at the moment. So you really don't have any internal defenders, and I don't think really Markkanen projects into an internal defender. You know, I think he projects into maybe a very high ceiling offensive player, but an adequate defender. I don't think he'll be a guy that, you know, destroys you defensively, but he's not going to be a rim protector. And I wonder, do you still feel that there's as much of a need as it used to be with the way the game has changed, with how much three-point shooting has become a factor? Do you think you need the interior defense as much as maybe you need guys who can close out really quickly, who can switch, kind of be on the perimeter and guard out there? Is interior defense still as big a thing as it was several years ago?
See, I do. I do. I saw it last night with Drummond. I thought Drummond, you could see him having a massive impact on the game anytime the Bulls tried to attack the rim. And I think you still, obviously, the three-point shooters, you need that, but it kind of goes hand in hand. The three-point shooting is what really opens up the floor, and especially for this team with Dunn and Levine being key pieces going forward. Those are guys that are going to be able, you know, to attack the rim. I think that's true with any team in the NBA. Part of what makes Golden State great, you still have guys that can attack the rim. They're not just everything is from the perimeter. You can still see guys attacking the rim. And I really think that's a big aspect of the game that you kind of have to have. I'm trying to think of the teams. Look, you have Draymond Green at Golden State. If you go through a Tristan Thompson for the Cavs, if you look at all the great teams, Capella at Houston, I think it's really hard. Al Horford's an excellent defender. It's really hard to look at some of the best teams in the league and say they have nothing defensively down low. And I don't think it's something you can just get away with having all negative defenders.
So I'm going to say Draymond Green is a great defender, but he's a guy who's maybe – is he like a massive disruptor at the rim compared to being a guy whose best defense is how quickly he can stay in front of other guards and attacking players and how he can rotate onto everyone? Is he like really a true rim protector? And I don't know if the answer to that is yes. San Antonio Spurs are maybe a team that I don't know if they have a true rim protector.
Oh, Gasol is an excellent rim protector.
Come on.
He is. I mean, let's not.
All right. I'm not going to go there. I don't buy that at all. Come on.
Nylon calculus tells me so. Yeah, I can point to it.
You know, and I look at... Tristan
Thompson. Did you hear the collective groan from across from Chicago when I gave you that one?
Tristan Thompson, I think, is okay. You know, I don't know that he's one of the. You know, his impact seems like on and off. I do think you need the guy, though. I mean, I think you're right, but I think it's almost more important that your guy can stop penetration not at the rim, but by switching and defending the pick and roll. I think that's actually maybe more important to stop guys closer to the perimeter. Because guys are hanging out on the perimeter more. So even though you still need to stop the drive, I think now teams are switching towards stopping it more at the point of attack and then using multiple bodies and just zones to stop people when they get into the paint. And maybe that just the singular shot blocker is not as important as it used to be, especially if you're going to lose a guy who can be great offensively. So I wonder, if I had the choice of having, say, Markkanen and Nico on the perimeter as my center and my power forward, even though neither one of them is a great rim protector, I think Nico is actually pretty solid defensively. I think he plays within the scheme well, and I think he does a really nice job. And if Markkanen grows into like a similar player, he does a really nice job. But neither is really like a plus defender, like a guy you think this is a shutdown defender. But I think maybe having those two guys and giving up a little on that end, but then what they give you offensively and the spacing they give you and the matchups they create, I think you probably would choose to have those two offensive guys now. As long as they can switch and do some other stuff defensively.
So, interesting statement you just made. So, am I sensing you're kind of changing your opinion and we need to move Nico? Because I was shocked that he played last night. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I was a little surprised. What it means that he played is that the Bulls don't have a deal imminently, right? I mean, if they had a deal lined up and something was going to go down on the 15th, he clearly was not going to play. So the fact that he plays means there's no deal that's going to happen, tomorrow, at least as we're recording here on the 14th. I still think the Bulls are looking to trade him, and I think it's interesting. I think he would be a good fit for the team going forward, and I'd kind of like to keep him. I just don't think that he wants to be here. I don't think it's reasonable to keep him. A lot of the stories that have come out show that he just doesn't really want to be here, and it's going to cost a fortune. So I think he's someone that I'd kind of like to keep in some ways, but I just don't think it's practical.
Yeah, it's interesting what they do with him going forward. Because I kind of agree with you, too. Like, I really like the way this team is kind of been, especially if LaVine ends up being, a superstar, is kind of, developed into. They go 10 deep. I think they have arguably the best bench in the league with Bobby Portis and Nico. I think both those guys would garner Sixth Man of the Year awards if they keep on coming off the bench for the full season, keep on putting up the numbers they are. I mean, look at the numbers that Portis has been putting up. It's insanity how good he's played. He played again, I thought, pretty well last night, although he's a very poor defender. That's the issue with him. He's a rim presenter, not a rim defender. He has no jumping ability. I think he's very poor on the defensive end. He's gotten better, but he's still got a long way to go. I think the big issue with the team, though, and just to get back to it one more time, is I think when they signed Felicio, I think they thought he could be that guy who is able to switch really well and be kind of like that lane defender, as you're describing. He's been the proverbial turd in the big red punch bowl. He's just been terrible. And that's, I think, might come back to haunt us, that signing. It's just a real disappointment how bad he's been.
Yeah, it has. And I guess the one thing I'd say to hedge that a little bit is it wasn't really big money. They signed him on a contract that was like, hey, let's see if you'll turn out to be good. It seems like a lot of money because it's $8 million a year. And I think in our heads, we're still kind of stuck in the cap being like closer to $70 million than like $100 million. And so, this is really like the deal that was like $5 million a year a few years back. And so the cap impact isn't that big. I do think it's obviously a terrible signing. I don't think anyone can look at that signing now and say this was a good idea. But at some point, you know, you take a guess on a young player and you see, is this guy going to develop into something? Do I think this guy can have something or not? And I think that's what happened here with the Bulls with Felicio, and they guessed wrong.
Well, I'm losing you, Doug.
Yeah,
are you
well,
there?
I'm still here, and I hear you fine.
Okay.
So moving on then, I would say getting back to Nico. So there's a lot of trade rumors about Nico out there. Basically, I think it's Detroit, it's Portland, and it's Utah. The Bulls are saying they want to take no long-term salary back, and they want a first-round draft pick. What type of pick do you think the Bulls are ultimately going to get for Nico? Do you think he's gone? Do you think there's any chance we can keep him? What do you think will happen here?
Well, they just had an interview with John Paxson, ESPN 1000 on Friday, and he was talking, you know, a lot of comments. Great interview. I highly recommend everybody go back to listen to it on the Waddle and Sylvie show. It was 3 o'clock on Friday, and he didn't even mention Nico until the end. And it was kind of like a question that was kind of thrown out there, but it was clear that I took it that way, that, you know, it wasn't like he was part of the core going forward. I think it's from all the news that's out about the trade, I think it's going to happen. But I also, though, I'm kind of hesitant. I think there's this general attitude that second-round picks are valuable, and trading Nico for a second-round pick would be a good thing. I completely disagree. He's much better than a second-round pick. Second-round picks, to me, are generally worthless, and I think people hold way too much stock in them as something that is of value. To me, they're really not, unless it's really high up, maybe a 32 or 33. So I'd like your opinion on that. I'd be shocked. Like, I heard Utah. Utah is a lottery team now. There's no way they'd give up a number one unless there's some serious protections on it for Nico Mirotic. I could be wrong. I think Nico would garner like a late first round pick from a team that's, you know, right there that's contending. I look at the Wizards or a team like that could use him off the bench. But I think it would probably result in the Bulls having to take salary back, which I'm a little hesitant to do. What do you think?
Well, I think he's going to get a first round. You'll get a first rounder for him, I think, for sure. And
really?
A late first rounder really isn't a whole lot different in value than an early second rounder. I agree with you. You really aren't going to get much value if you get like a second round pick for him. I think you have to do better than that. And really, maybe one of the questions ultimately is, what are you hoping to achieve here with this team? So this is a team that for a while we were tanking. We were trying to get a good pick. I mean, they even announced in the offseason, like, we're going to be really bad this year. And maybe for a few years. We're going to be competing. We're going to try and load up in the draft. You know, they said like that was probably going to be part of the process. And now they've done better maybe with Markkanen than they expected to do. Maybe Dunn has been better than they expected. We've just seen Levine for one game. Portis and Nico came back with big improvements. And so now all of a sudden you wonder, we're back into that tank or not tank philosophy. And if you trade Nico, are you still going to be bad enough with Levine back to even get your pick into the top 5 or 6?
Right.
And if you're not, if you're just going to say end up with a 10th pick even after this trade, is there still value in doing that? And I don't know that the 10th pick is so much better that I wouldn't rather just make the playoffs and get the 16th pick.
Well, that's the question. Let me ask you this. So right now the Bulls sit at 12 in the Eastern Conference, and people who are been sleeping don't realize that the Eastern Conference is much better this year. I'll give you an example. The 5th seed in the West is 23-20 Thunder. The 8th seed in the East are the Pacers at 22-20. So the Thunder, excuse me, are 23-20. So the Bulls right now are 12. Between them and the Pacers at 22-20, the Pistons are 7th seed, 22-19, are the Sixers, the Knicks, and the Hornets. There's only 3 teams between us and the Pacers. Do you think it's realistic that we could pass those 3 teams and get into the playoffs, assuming we don't make any changes going forward?
Well, it's not even just passing those 3 teams. You have to pass 4 because you also have to pass the Pacers, right? So, right now you're 11 games under 500. I think you got to plan on them being at least a couple games over 500 by the end of the season in order to make the playoffs. So, the question is, can you get to 44 wins or so from where you are right now? And you know that might be pretty tricky. You know, that's you only would have what the Bulls have 27 losses now, so 44 wins. You'd only have 11 more losses. So I think, what is that? Come out to 28-11 over the rest of the year. If my quick math is good, it's probably not. But, you know, something like that. That might be, that's a higher level than they're playing at right now. But I think you'd have a realistic chance at that if you kept Mirotic. And so part of this is not just like, oh, I think there's value in being the 8th round sacrificial lamb. But it's also like a note to free agents. Like, hey, look, we rebuilt this thing in 1 year. all of our talent is very young. You know, we've got a lot of pieces here that fit, and we got a lot of cap room to bring people in. And you start looking at, like, the value of your cap room versus the value of your pick. I think if you can't get into the top five or so, I don't know that the value of this pick is, like, so exceptional. I think it would be, you know, still good, but I don't know the drop-off between 10 and 16. If I start looking at if I win, you know, 30 games versus if I win 44 games, what is the gap in terms of the free agents that will consider me? You know, so say I'm looking at, like, bringing in DeMarcus Cousins, who I hate, but, you know, he's one of the big names out there. Or Paul George, whom I'm also not a big fan of. I really don't like this free agent class. But say you can bring in, like, some of these guys, like, you have a real chance. Like, there's not that many teams with cap room, and there's not many that are any good. Like, if even though everyone is talking about the Lakers bringing in LeBron James, you know, the Lakers right now are one of the worst teams in the league. You know, so they're one loss or one win less than the Bulls, but same number of losses. And I don't know if the Lakers are really heading in the right direction like the Bulls are. So by the end of the season, I expect that gap actually to be quite a bit bigger. And if you're like LeBron James, are you really going to go to the Lakers with Lonzo Ball and like a 30-win team? Like, I mean, I don't think LeBron's going to come here, but if I was LeBron and I was choosing between the Bulls and the Lakers, and the Bulls won like 40-something games, and they have all young talent that's going to stay, I would be thinking, yeah, the Bulls are probably a better bet. And the, you know, the competition in the East is easier, so there's a better chance of getting to the finals again. You know, it just seems like, you know, a better bit.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of negative Nancys, you know, listening to the podcast right now, rolling their eyes. Oh, the Bulls in the free agency. Again, this isn't. It's just not an accurate statement. The Bulls have not acquired top free agent talent. I go back to Gasol. Gasol was the second most desired free agent in that class in 2014 behind Carmelo Anthony. He had many good organizations running after him, and he signed for less money to come to the Chicago Bulls. And we won 50 games that year. And the Bulls actually won a series in the playoffs against Milwaukee, and we lost when Gasol got injured to Cleveland. To just ignore these facts is just it continues to happen, and it continues to just this. There's this general attitude out there: nobody's going to sign here in Chicago. And I disagree. I just disagree. I think this is a good, especially when, you know, before there were 20, 30 teams with cap space, and or not maybe not that many, but 20. This year, it's really a handful of teams that have legit chance of signing major free agents. I think there's going to be a big shock to the system for a lot of these free agents with the money that's going to be handed out. It's not going to be what they were expecting because some teams just don't have the capability of doing it. Who are the Pistons going to sign? Like, look at the Pistons. You can go up and down these teams and you find these horrible contracts that are really cap strapping these teams. They're not going to be able to sign any massive free agents. So I agree with you to a certain extent. Like DeMarcus Cousins, I want no part of that guy. He's never going to win anything in the NBA. He's a loser. And he's a very talented. He's top five talent, probably. But he's a loser. And so I agree. Chris Paul, there's a lot of these other, you know, other names out there that probably aren't realistic. I don't know. I need to go through the whole list. But I do know the Bulls have positioned themselves to sign either a restricted free agent of a lot of merit, like a Clint Capella, or, you know, surprise somebody with a major free agent signing. And if they get good enough and they somehow make the miracle and make the playoffs this year, that's the approach I'd rather have them take. But it does lead into a little bit of a conversation about LaVine. I mean, let's assume LaVine plays really, really well, or just plays like he's shown right now. What do you think a realistic situation is for him going forward as far as this offseason?
I think it's going to be tough this offseason because I would not want to pay LaVine huge money until I could see him fix some flaws in his game. I do think he's a pretty gifted scorer, but I don't know why anyone views him as a future superstar yet. He's someone who doesn't drive a whole lot. He doesn't generate fouls. He's a pretty efficient scorer. He had almost nothing in any other part of the game. Like, those are still some pretty big holes he has to fill. Like, the comparison I use is Kevin Martin, who actually drew fouls, though. But, like, in terms of, like, a player who is, like, an efficient scorer who didn't do much else. So LaVine needs to prove to me he's more than Kevin Martin. And I do think he's going to get big money. I do think it factors in the Bulls' favor that there probably aren't a lot of teams with cap space, and they also probably feel the Bulls are match. I don't think he's going to get a lot of a lot of offers. I do think the Bulls will need to make him something respectable in terms of an offer, you know, in the 20-plus million range in order to keep him. And I think they probably will do that. We'll try and do like a more extensive cap analysis maybe next week, because I haven't run all of the numbers and looked at all the details, and I definitely need to do that to talk really intelligently about it. But I do know LaVine's cap hole is much less than the contract they're going to sign him to, so the Bulls can play some games with numbers if they use their cap room this year. And that'll be something we'll have to figure out, you know, what really they should do. And they have some options they're going to have to think about. And from what we've seen in the press, it does not seem like the Bulls want to use any of this cap room. They're actually under the cap now, and they could have some opportunities to play that third team in a deal where two teams want to make a trade, but they can't quite figure out the cap space and need to send salary somewhere else and pay that team in draft picks. The Bulls are positioned to be that type of team in such a deal if they wanted to be.
I think you're absolutely right on the one comment you made with LaVine. I think if he goes out and think he's going to get some massive deal from another team outside the Bulls, it's just not going to happen. There's only nine teams, I think, with cap space going forward, and if you go through every one of them, I don't think there's any of them that are going to make a serious offer for Zach LaVine. So I think the Bulls hold a position of strength here, no matter how good he plays. And I think there's nothing but, you know, positivity that the fan base should feel as far as his future with the team. If he plays great, we'll get him on a good deal. If he plays terrible, we'll probably get him on a good deal. And we also have that flexibility to not get, if, you know, gosh forbid, if something happens, we don't have to sign him at all. So I think there should be nothing but positivity here.
Yeah, yep, I agree with you there. And we'll see what happens. I have a few thoughts, like, just in general with the Bulls. So, like, if you had to choose with Chicago right now, would you choose to, say, keep your cap room next year, or say you could trade with the Knicks and you're going to bring back Joakim Noah, who's on this just super albatross of a deal, right? But you got, like, a future draft pick. Or the Lakers bring back Luol Deng, who's on a super albatross of a deal. What is it with ex-Bulls and albatrosses? you could bring back Luol Deng, who the Lakers would love to dump, and you got a pick. Like, would you take that type of deal if you had the option, or would you rather save, say, you know, your $20 million or $15, $16 million of cap room for next offseason?
No, that's a great question. Well, first of all, I'd like to point out that Tom Thibodeau, those were his two first targets for free agency. And in an alternative universe where he signed both those guys to long-term contracts, the Timberwolves have 14 wins. So I just want to point that out. I always love taking shots at him. I would say I don't want any part of those long-term deals. And I know I'm alone here. You know, we'll get a future draft pick. I think the future is now. Like, I don't feel like the team is in a bad enough position to say, hey, I don't believe in the 76ers five-year rebuilds. I don't believe in it at all. And I think the worst thing you can do is take on a dead deal like Noah's or Deng's and just screw up this flexibility that you currently have, which is a huge asset for you. And if it's going to be like a pick for next year, great. I just don't see any of those teams, you know, doing that, right? I would consider if the Lakers were willing to send us Ingram and Deng, I'd be all over it. They won't, though. You know, they're just not going to do it. They're not going to send one of those super good guys. They might send, you know, a lesser piece, let's put it that way. But I don't believe I'm just taking on cap space for future picks down the road 2 or 3 years further along. What about you?
I'm actually almost in the exact opposite boat as you. Or I shouldn't say almost. I am in the exact opposite boat as you. I love the idea of taking on a pick in 2 to 3 years, especially if you can get the protection. So say the Lakers, they don't want to trade a pick. You know, that's something they've said, to get rid of Luol Deng. But say the Lakers will trade you their 2019 pick. So 2018 is right off the table because they're going to be terrible. But say they trade you their 2019 pick with, like, say, top five protection and 2020 unprotected. You know, something like that. You know, the Lakers have all this cap room then. This sign maybe up to two max free agents this year. They'll get a top pick in this draft where maybe there's franchise-changing players. And then they've got Lonzo Ball and Ingram, who they're probably at least somewhat high on and think has some future. And I think Magic Johnson is just a little cocky and maybe would think that that plan could work. Mm-hmm. I would love that because it gives you the opportunity, if this falls apart for some reason, which there's a chance that it will. There's a chance that it won't, and that'll be great. You'll get, like, the pick 28 in 2 years, and it'll suck. But if it does fall apart, it gives you the opportunity to get a very high pick, Or even if there's protections on it and you get an extra, say, like, pick around like 12 or 13. But you get that in 2 to 3 years when all of a sudden your team is starting to build. You're like a 45, 46, 47 win team. You know, you're going to get your own pick at 16, and now you get another pick at 13. And you need like an influx of talent from somewhere, and you need like cheap contracts and stuff. And it's hard to then get those at this point in your development. You know, you get to a position where you're like completely capped out. You have who you have, and you only have mid-round picks. It's hard to like add like more stuff. But if you throw some extra bullets into your gun that are going to land later that you can use in a couple years, all of a sudden when you get to this point where normally you're capped out and you have like no flexibility and you have no room to do anything, you've got multiple draft picks in the draft all of a sudden. You're a team that can be involved in a lot of types of trades. You have extra assets you can move for players to win now. It just gives you a lot of flexibility at a point when you're really going to need it. You're buying future flexibility. And if I was really in love with any of the free agents that were in this year's draft, I would probably feel differently. But when I look at who's available this year and like the likeliness that they would come to Chicago, I think like, yeah, I'm okay giving up my cap room and then just like holding with this team, giving these young guys another year to develop, and then getting another asset or two back in a few years when these guys are going to be starting to peak and be really good. And now all of a sudden I've got a couple extra assets in the tank.
Yeah, but you made a great argument there, but I would counter with, you are freeing these teams. Like they've already set their path in hell with these incredibly dumb contract signings with the no and dang examples. And this is an albatross around their neck that will keep them very poor for years to come. And you're allowing them to get better. You're giving them that freedom to make those moves to get better. And you're still going to, even in 2 years, you're still going to have those 20 picks, right? Even if you're much better, you're always going to have your own number one pick. Those are always going to be there. I just don't think it's likely that the Knicks are going to be terrible if you get Noah's contract off the books. To bet on these teams to continue to be bad for forever. I mean, look what happened with the Sacramento deal, right? That's an example of a franchise that is just a disaster and that never really resulted in anything in fruition. That was always out there. Hey, the Bulls going to get this pick. And it ended up being a second round pick that we sold for cash. I just think it's unlikely that those eventually always turn into something.
That's almost a reverse situation, though. I mean, that pick was just so heavily protected, and they were a train wreck forever. So
yeah,
I mean, you're arguing exactly. That the Lakers can't be a train wreck, and then you bring up an example where the Kings were a train wreck for too long. So
exactly.
I think you do have to negotiate the protections in some way that you have a reasonable chance. You know, it is really always about risk and reward, right? The more chances you're giving someone and the bigger risk you're taking, also you should have chances for bigger reward. So that does have to be in the balance.
Aren't you concerned, though, let's say you do take that on, that there's an opportunity next year and, you know, whatever that opportunity presents itself, and now we're saddled with that contract. We're saddled with Dang. We're saddled with Noah. Where those opportunities are always going to be there as long as you maintain that cap flexibility.
But you're not going to be under the cap next year, right? You're gonna use your cap space this year.
Because you're saying Levine, we're gonna sign him for a big deal that's gonna put us over. Is that true? I mean, are we gonna be well?
Levine
over the cap?
Won't take all the cap space, but they'll sign some other free agents. They'll fill it up. We won't be under the cap after this summer. There's almost no chance that's gonna happen. I mean, I guess there's always some chance, but Levine is gonna take up a big enough chunk of it, and you can. Spend more money if you use it this year because Levine's cap hold is less than his eventual salary will be in all likelihood. And so you could actually go considerably over the cap if you want to do that. I don't think the Bulls are actually going to do that because historically they've always, when they could spend like and really max themselves out, for better or worse. Like a great example is when they signed Ben Wallace and then they immediately traded Tyson Chandler. They didn't have to trade Tyson Chandler, but doing so, you know, they were at the cap, and then once they traded Tyson Chandler, now like it stopped them from like exploding like over the cap. And so that'll be the same situation this year. If they max themselves out, they'll put themselves in position where in a few years, you know, their cap will explode and they'll be in this like consistent hell. So they probably won't do that. And actually taking on salary would be very much of their MO, where they take on a 2-year deal. It limits how much they can spend this year. They get a couple assets back so they can sell it to the fan base. And then in a couple of years, that money rolls off, and then they won't be under the cap when that money rolls off because other extensions will kick in, but it'll stop them from like being in the luxury tax area. It'll like keep them into this like, we're paying reasonable amounts for our roster, and we have some flexibility. One thing that Bulls fans have complained about, and even I have complained about, is that The Bulls have never been aggressive about spending as much as they can. They've always been very shy around the luxary tax. They've crossed it, I think, exactly one time. They've been very fiscally responsible. But one of the things about that is it allows them to make rebuilds similar to the one they're making now. It allows them to never be so far behind and so far stuck that you just can't do anything for 4 years. And the Bulls, I mean, right now, you agree with me, right? We're on the cusp of a one-year rebuild again.
Agree.
So that gives them that type of flexibility to do stuff like that and to never truly bottom out and be the 76ers. And so I do appreciate that they always have some long-term thinking in mind, unless the short-term really looks like it is a title possibility.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up some fantastic points there. You know, I guess it all comes down to what do you get in return? And it sounds like you're willing to take an asset, a potential 1, 2, or 3 years out, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably, if you're going to get Ingram for him, then absolutely, that's an asset that's going to be good next year. That's an asset going forward. I just feel like this team could really contend much quicker than most people. But you do bring up a lot of great points there. I mean, and I think that's part of the frustration, if there is any, for the Bulls, is on exactly what you described, is a reluctance to go way over. And you saw that with Kyle Korver, too, the year they let him go. You know, that's kind of, I think, more on ownership than the general manager.
Yeah, it's definitely ownership that's setting that metric of, like, you can't pass a luxury tax unless these conditions are met.
Sure. I did want to ask you a question. I had a question for you. Back to the tanking situation. Like, let's assume the Bulls, like, Pax is like, I really want that top five pick, and I'm going to start trading away this team and just wrecking it to the core. And so, you know, I think the three most likely to go would be Lopez, Mirotic, and Holiday. Out of those three, which one would you say would have the most negative impact on the team?
Well,
with their departure.
It's got to be. I mean, it's not Holiday, like right off the cuff.
He's pretty good though. He's I'm fine, shocked at his plus minus.
Nico Mirotic is playing like a superstar, so yeah, fine. Holiday's fine. Lopez is not playing as well as Mirotic, but I think as we discussed earlier, he has a fairly unique role on the team as like the only like really tough interior rebounder and defender, and so it's kind of like the uniqueness of what he brings to this team. And the leadership he brings to this team might be missed a lot too, so it's hard for me to say. But I think if you traded both Nico and Lopez and Holiday, I mean, really those three guys are the three guys you dump, right? You probably don't see any of those three guys as part of your any bright future necessarily. You know, Holiday is eminently replaceable, and you know the other guys are, you know, good players, but you know I think they're probably not here for the long term. So those are the three guys that you move, and I think you probably need to move all three to get back into that top five or six range.
No, agreed. I agree. So I think, and just for everyone listening, they moved up the trade deadline. Do you know exactly or have a ballpark idea when that is, the first week of February?
I actually do not know. You know, with 2 seconds more notice, I would have Googled it for you, but, you know.
Sorry. So it's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, right? So this is going to go down. I have to ask you this one as we wrap up the first edition of the bus that's, I think, gone remarkably well as we're riding around the roads of Chicago. I'd like to ask you, do you think that's what they're going to do? Like, give me your prediction as we look into the big red crystal ball. Do you think they're going to make these trades? And if so, will all three go? Will one go? Do you think Lopez will still be on the roster? What's your prediction?
I think Mirotic is definitely gone. And by the way, Google has answered my question. It's February 8th. So that is when the trade deadline will hit. So
wow.
We don't have, you know, so much time left. What, that's about 3 weeks-ish from today, a little bit more than that, 3 weeks and a couple days. So Feb 8th, I do think Mirotic will definitely be gone. I think that is partially to do with getting worse, but I think there's another big part of it that he's made it clear, you know, after Portis broke his face and they didn't trade Portis, that he doesn't really want to be here, that he'd like to be moved somewhere else. And I think the Bulls can get some value back for him. And he's not going to sign a contract here for sure. So I think he's gone either way. And I think it's partially just due to his relationship with the team and not just trying to get worse. Now, if they trade Lopez and if they trade Holiday, that will definitely be a situation where they are just looking to get worse and just trying to trade anyone they don't see as part of the future. And those trades will really determine what direction this team is taking. Like, so if you see those guys gone, it means they are, you know, aggressively trying to get bad and get that pick in the draft.
Here's another dark horse that I'm going to throw out there as a guy they might move, because I think he has significant value for a lot of teams. It's David Nwaba. He's an excellent defender. He's an excellent athlete. I think he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. So I think it'll be interesting to see how much he gets signed for next year. But that's a guy I think would a lot of teams would have an interest in bringing on to help shore up a defensive, you know, fault. Any contender would. So he's another guy, and he's a guy I think that his departure would have seriously negative ramifications, because as you stated before, he's an excellent defender.
It's a good point. I don't think you get anything back from Nwaba. I also agree with your take on Nwaba. I don't think you get anything back. His bird rights wouldn't come with him because he wasn't on any kind of deal. We don't have bird rights on him. So anyone who trades for him is not going to be able to sign him to a big long-term deal anyway, without using more than what exceptions they already have. I think maybe there's some kind of, I know they've in my hiatus, I've not paid attention. I know they switched up some of the salary cap rules around the early bird rights. So you might even have some type of bird rights on a guy with a one-year deal, but I don't think that there is anything that they can do to really sign him. I'll also look that up and correct it later. So, but yeah, I do think he's another guy you could trade, and you maybe get a second round pick for someone who just wants to have him on the roster for the playoffs. And he has no real salary cap associated with him, so any team, even when way over, could take him on, you know, pretty trivially easily.
Yeah, I think if Paxton truly wants to embrace the tank, he's got to move the three we talked about before in Holiday, Lopez, and Meritich, and he's got to add Nwaba. I think that would do it. I don't think that this team is good enough, even with Levine back, to win many more games if you move those four players.
Yeah, so. No arguments there. That would do it.
So now we pull the big red bus into the driveway. What an excellent ride out on this glorious Sunday morning as the big red sun shines down. Doug, I got to tell you, many things out of this rebuild and this great start have brought warmth to my heart about the beloved Bull, but one of them is your return. And I do, every time I think of you, I do think of Luke Skywalker on the island and Rey bringing the microphone back to you. And your powers are back, and it's so great to have you as an important voice that was lost in the sea of negativity. You bring intelligence, you bring mirth, you bring love, and for that I'm eternally grateful as we park the Big Red Bus.
All right, well, for next show, no, we're going to have to tone down the Big Red analogies, and you're going to have to stop talking about me coming back.
I've got
great.
Five.
Those,
got
those five two things, plus. Requirements for the next show. But
You've got it, but I've got five pages of analogies still left to share with the audience. Are you kidding?
All right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Big Red Bus. Hopefully we keep up the show, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Sounds great, brother. Have a good one, Doug.
You too.